today we're going to have, well, I'll take half the lecture talking about wireless LANs, and then the demonstrator will come in at 11:30 to talk about NS3. Okay, and so between the two, you should have everything you need to get rolling on your assignments. Okay, and I hope to have the demonstrator come in at some future date as well, just to see how you're doing. Okay, so last time we were dealing with looking at modulation techniques to deal with small-scale fading. And so first we looked at spread spectrum and noted that we can deal with the effects much better if the signal is spread over a broader bandwidth. So the first attempts spread the signal either by sort of explicitly changing the frequency at which the signal was transmitted, or by making it look like the bitrate had increased by encoding each individual bit as multiple bits. In either case, you needed some sort of spreading code in order to figure out either how to encode the bits or how to change your frequencies. And we saw that if we were clever about the choice of spreading codes and had them either orthogonal or near orthogonal, then we could share our bandwidth amongst multiple users. And so those sorts of systems were quite popular for a while, and they represented a big improvement over narrowband signaling. But they sort of eventually you sort of hit a wall in terms of spectral efficiency. So systems have now moved on to orthogonal frequency division multiplexing. And the idea here is that you can have overlapping channels, but you can pack them in quite tightly in a way that they don't interfere with each other. And so if you give all of the channels to a single user, you've spread their spectrum and you've sort of increased the reliability of their signal. We can also use the channels for different users, multiple users. And so, again, most wireless systems these days use OFDM/OFDMA. Finally, we saw that if you had access to multiple antennas at sender and receiver, then you could, again, use the multipath or the small-scale fading effects and the multipath effects to create separate sub-channels, again, within the same frequency bandwidth. And then, as always, you could use those sub-channels either for the purpose of redundancy, so get them all to a single user and let them improve their signal quality, or for multiple access to increase the number of users that you have in your system. Okay, so today we're going to look at wireless local area networks, and so the idea here is essentially that we want to achieve point-to-point connectivity between end users, so without going out to the internet, but assuming that they are sharing, or perspective of the end users, it looks like they're sharing a single link. And so they can use that link to contact, to communicate with each other. Okay. So all of pretty much all of these point-to-point connections are specified under the IEEE 802 family, and in particular wireless LANs are the 802.11 standard, so Wi-Fi. Okay, so Stallings gives a pretty good discussion, although, again, the book is fairly old, so he's not talking about the more modern versions of 802.11. And if you look at the radio electronics, then in their tutorials, then they do discuss sort of standards, moving up to recent standards. Okay, so obviously these stats are out of date at this point, but certainly there probably is sort of multiple, some multiple wireless devices per person. That number is increasing all the time, and pretty much everybody now has a smartphone, at least everybody in the developed world. Okay, so smartphones have sort of multiple wireless connectivity capabilities. We all know that. We can do Bluetooth, we can do Wi-Fi, we can do cellular connections. Additionally, well, pretty much all of our computers, laptops, whatever, have the ability to connect wirelessly to access points. And they would be doing that, again, over Wi-Fi, so over the 802.11, using the 802.11 specification. So, again, the advantages of having a wireless connectivity are just that. You don't have wires. Certainly from a user perspective, this is quite useful. It also allows networks to be deployed rapidly and at low cost. So, when we look, we're going to, after this, go back to looking at sort of cellular systems, and they have fantastic coverage, but there's a lot of infrastructure behind providing that coverage. These wireless local area networks can set up coverage over sort of smaller scale region fairly quickly and sort of to meet sort of transient needs. So if you have a conference or a concert or anything, then you can set up access points and then take them down when you're done. Okay, so they're very flexible and handy. You still can't get it's not quite speed, because we know we can get really high speeds, but it's a combination of speed and range, so you can't get those high speeds over a long range. Okay, and they're hard to secure because anybody can listen to the transmissions. They are less reliable, so we've spent several days talking about the issues with radio channels, sort of separate from wired channels. Okay. And again, they're not intended to provide large area coverage. So again, you have a fixed range. We'll see you can, of course, string a bunch of sort of fixed range access points together, but you're not doing that sort of with the goal of covering a city or covering any really large area. Okay, so it's arguably the most successful wireless networking technology. That'll run neck and neck with cellular technology, but again, just because it's small scale, it probably sort of has ultimately greater deployment. In contrast to, again, cellular networks, Wi-Fi operates in license-exempt bands, and so, again, that means that anybody can set up a Wi-Fi network. You cannot go and set up a cellular network without going to ComReg, or well, here it would be ComReg, and if you do, they're going to tell you to get lost anyway. Okay. And that is, that plus the sort of lack of infrastructure are what makes it a lot less expensive to deploy. Again, all of these point-to-point networks, not just wireless ones, but wired ones, Ethernet, etc., are standardized by the IEEE. There are some divergences typically between what's actually implemented in the standards, but certainly for Wi-Fi, they're fairly minimal. For other sort of personal area things, since those are not as sort of settled, there are bigger divergences. Okay. The Wi-Fi Alliance, then, is the industry organization that certifies standards compliance. So if your router or device has been certified to comply with sort of one of the flavors, then it should work with any other device with the same flavor of Wi-Fi. Okay, so again, when the radio frequency, the spectrum was divided up, a lot of bands are licensed, so you typically have to pay to use those. So cellular providers have to obtain a license to operate in certain bands. Other bands are set so that you don't are unlicensed. Exactly what those are can vary from country to country, although again the ones reserved for the ones that the wireless LAN operates and do are available in all countries. Okay. Now, because anybody can set up a network, okay, we have to limit the range of that network, so otherwise he doesn't get set up the network and just blast the whole surroundings, interfere with other people's ability to operate in the same spectrum. Okay, so there's a limit on the power, which again is going to limit the range of interference for
And again, because it's unlicensed, multiple entities can operate or emit within those, within the same range. So wireless lines can actually be interfered with by microwave ovens.
So the sort of big theoretical principle that we're going to talk about today is medium access control. So again, we have a radio link with multiple users trying to send over this link, and so possibly they can transmit at the same time and interfere with each other. So one of the big key concepts is how to achieve that sharing. Again, if you've done which is a BE224, you have to have this discussion for local area, how you wire local area networks. Okay. But before thinking about that, well, we're just going to step back and think about exactly the type of network that we want to set up using our wireless LAN technology. Okay. And so we have basically two possibilities. The first is that you just have a bunch of wireless Wi-Fi enabled devices and they all just communicate with each other. Okay, so that's an ad hoc setup. And so in terms of terminology, the group of devices that want to communicate is called a basic services set. And it will be defined by, authorization or authentication, so who can join that communication group, and also sort of who is in the range of the communication group. So if you have, if you're just doing this in an ad hoc fashion, which refers to as an independent BSS, and that doesn't happen that often. Usually what happens is that end users communicate via an access point. Okay, so you send messages to the access point to be forwarded to other users or off to the internet.
So, this are all of these communications on the same wavelength, or
yes.
And how do they manage to not interfere?
That's the idea of medium access control. So we'll be talking about that later. Okay, so each network has a
service set identifier, which is a name for the network. So, again, you can sort of collectively what you're joining. As we said, within that setup, if you have a single access point, then there is going to be only a certain range of coverage. Okay. And so we all know that home
maybe go out into the garden, but you know, you can't go two houses down and still stay connected to your network. At home, that's fine. And if you have sort of institutional coverage, then you sort of want sort of broader coverage. So, as an example, so if you have to, if you can actually connect to Eduroam, then you've got kept coverage all over the campus, and that's going to be obviously provided by having multiple access points. But
will the handover between those be discussed?
No, actually.
Oh, okay.
No. I'd have to look into the exact details of handover. We'll discuss handover in a cellular context, but not for Wi-Fi. That's a good question, actually. Maybe I should throw in a slide. Okay. So, we can have multiple access points, and then those are typically connected with, again, something like an Ethernet backbone. And so, from the end user point of view, this is all considered to be a single network, a single local area network. So at this point, you are actually moving from point to point to point. But, again, as far as the end user is concerned, you can think of this as a single local area network. Okay, so Wi-Fi is specified in the 802.11 standard, and this is part of the greater IEEE 802 family of local area network standards. So WiMAX is 802.16, ISDN Ethernet is, I think, at 802.3. So all of the local area standards pretty much encompass Bluetooth relates to the 802.15 standard, etc. Okay. So in general, what these standards specify is the physical and the data link layer. And so they tell you how you're going to get your bits from point A to point B. And they then, again, do framing, so your collection of bits is checked for correctness and ensure that it arrives in one piece. And on top of that, again, we have this issue of the users are sharing a medium, so how are we regulating access to that medium? Beyond that, it will interface again with our IP network protocol. So, as we're, I'm sure, at this point all aware, there are loads of different flavors of 802.11. So A, B, G, N, AC, and all of these are going to specify some combination of, again, different physical layers, different frequency ranges. Basically under the mainland, sort of tied to the underlying physical transmission. So we'll say a few words about just what is in use, as we've already talked about, spread spectrum and final techniques. On top of that all, again, we have an access control layer, and so this is contention based, usually. And so, like the original Ethernet, and using similar contention resolution strategies, the standard does allow for medium access to be controlled by the access point, but that's tends not to be implemented. And so, like I said, there's the common LLC layer. And
you've seen that before, so we're not going to talk about it again. Okay. So, it's a single standard, but there's lots of different flavors, and the flavors deal with some aspect of the protocol. So that's unique. The naming is again to append a letter. So maybe to 11A, B, G, and the lettering is done as and when the working group is established to work on the standard, not when the standard is finally complete. So we don't see the you see gaps, and you don't necessarily see them being sequential. So again, a lot of them deal with just the different phi layer and how that impacts on other portions. Others can apply to MAC and other layers. So there's security, there's coverage, there's other options as well. And some will work together, like the quality of service amendment is designed to work with the basic standard. Okay. So, a lot of the sort of most notable work is, again, in improving or changing phi technology. And we see we go from spread spectrum techniques to OFDM and MIMO techniques. This allows us greater range. Greater range and higher throughput. And we see one of the things here, what you can see is one of the things we're subtracting off is throughput and range. Other common amendments, quality of service enhancements, and so again, that's typically built on top of our contention based MAC. We can see how that works. St-
standards dealing with setting up networks of these lands, and if you're doing that, then sort of trying to better manage your radio resources.
Just when you said before contention-based, can you remind what it is?
So you send, well, what contention-based is, and we will be getting to it later, but you send your data, you send frames in this case. If they collide, then you back off random amounts so that you can resend them.
Okay.
Now, that's the short answer. There's other mechanisms because you don't want to just keep sending things. There are.
But just with the fading, how do they know there is a collision? Because Ethernet, there is no fading, so they can, but for wireless.
Well, the answer is that's the difference between wireless and wired, and so you have to have sort of other mechanisms to try and. Well, avoid collisions, and the ultimate way you know that something went wrong is you don't get an acknowledgement for your packet, essentially. But we will go through that. Okay. So, users, again, we'll have to join the network, and you know, again, here we're assuming that we have our access point, and so the access point is going to transmit beacon frames. These are sent at low data rates and maximum power so that the user can actually hear them and detect them, or have the best chance of hearing and detecting them. And they are going to provide the information the user needs to join the identity of the network and sort of the radio frequencies. The user has to scan for these signals, and it can either look on all of the available channels, or it can actually send a request to the access point looking for a response. Active scanning, well, it's more intrusive, and again, it's possible to, it can possibly cause collision problems, but is faster. Once you've found the network and have established basic communication channels with the network, then you will need to go through an authentication process, so login and password to establish your right to be on that. Okay, so we've already noted that the wireless channel is less reliable than the wired channel, so in older versions of 802.11, you had essentially a stop-and-wait scheme going, where each frame individually was acknowledged. So again, for the older systems, there was a high enough chance of error that it was more efficient to actually just make sure your frame got through before sending the next one. In newer versions, so N and onwards, then you have a sort of window-based acknowledgement of frames, so you can transmit multiple frames now before receiving acknowledgements. Again, this
reflects on the greater reliability now of the channel.
Okay, so you're assuming it's more likely than not that your data will get there correctly.
Okay. So, again, there's two possibilities, roughly, for MAC access. So the most common is this, what's called the distributed coordination function, and that's contention-based. We'll talk about it. So again, Ethernet use CSNA CD, where you could listen, the CD is listening for the collisions. And as it was pointed out, that's hard. You can't necessarily do that. So now we use what's called CSNA CA. So we try to avoid the collisions instead. We do listening and random back off. And it's, again, the system that is used. The other possibility is point coordination function, and here the access point regulates who gets the medium at any given time. Okay, so that's the sort of polling system. Again, it's not widely implemented, and of course you could have some combination of the two, so you could have contention-based period and then a contention-free period. Okay. The main plus, again, of having contention-free access is that you can control quality of service much better. But we'll see, there are some quality of service mechanisms built on top of our contention-based medium access as well. Okay. So, we have carrier sense multiple access with collision avoidance, and so the idea is that we're listening to the channel and trying to set up conditions so that we're not going to transmit at the same time. Okay. So what does a node do? It senses the channel. If the channel is idle, then it'll start transmitting, otherwise back off. If a collision occurs, well, then you got have us going to be detected, but we back off again and sense the channel.
Okay.
So, the problem that we have is that listening doesn't tell us everything about what's going on in the medium. So again, if you have a bus, you assume that within a certain time period, everybody will have heard everything, all of the transmissions. In the wireless domain, the signals have range. The range might be somewhat dependent on, again, fading effects, and not every user within the range will hear every other user. So, again, we have to deal with interference from multiple. signals and possibly noise, and we have a power threshold over which we can send our signal. Because not everybody is hearing everything that's going on, we have two problems, one of which are called the hidden node problem, and then ironically, we also have what's called an exposed node problem. Okay, so the idea behind these problems is, so we have a pair of users who are communicating, so we have a transmitter sending and a receiver receiving. And now our hidden node is not able to hear the signal from the transmitter. So the transmitter is out of the range of the hidden node. This, again, if the hidden node is listening, that means that the hidden node will feel free to transmit if it has something to transmit. The problem with that being that the receiver is within the range of the hidden node. And that means that anything that's transmitted will interfere with the original communication. In this case, of course,
frames are typically lost.
Okay. Now, you could say that's the sort of the key problem. There is another interesting situation that arises. And again, we have a transmitter sending to our receiver. And now we have what's called an exposed node. The exposed node can hear the transmission. Okay. Based on hearing that transmission, it will not send its own communication. But it's possible that the receiver is not in range of the exposed node. So if the exposed node had wanted to actually communicate, transmit to some other user, then it would be able to without interference. So essentially, because of these sort of oddities within who hears what, you could actually have two transmissions going on at the same time, but that won't happen if the exposed node hears transmission. Okay. So, if you change the power levels, then you're going to sort of change the amount of exposed and hidden nodes you have. So the lower the power levels, the more hidden nodes you have, the higher the power levels, the more exposed nodes you have. Okay. So the question then is, well, what can we do about this? And we do what's called virtual carrier sensing. And so what that is a signaling that will give
the nodes a clearer picture of what's going on in the network. So the signaling occurs in the form of request to send and clear to send messages. So the transmitter sends a request to send message, and the receiver sends a clear to send message. So the two things that are happening is, first of all, we'll just see who now hears the two messages. The messages also have information in them about how long the transmission is going to take. And so what that means is that you can use, you can replace, if you hear the message, that replaces having to sense the medium for the duration of the transmission. You say, okay, I know that the medium is busy for this length of time. So what happens? We'll look first at our hidden node problem. So the transmitter sends the request to send, and our hidden node is not going to hear that. But now our receiver sends clear to send, and if we assume the ranges are sort of roughly equivalent, then the hidden node is going to hear the clear to send. The clear to send has information about, again, how long the medium is going to be busy. So the hidden node knows that the medium is going to be busy and that shouldn't send, and it knows for how long to wait before sending. Yeah?
Just do the request to send interfere with someone transmitting?
Possibly. All you've done essentially is reduce the period, because you assume that the request to send and the clear to send are short, and we'll see that they've sent more quickly than other types of messages, but they could still interfere, yes. In any sort of contention-based system, you can never completely eliminate the risk of collision. You can just try and make it as small as possible for, you try to make the vulnerable period as small as possible. Okay, so what happens with the exposed node? The exposed node, the reverse will happen. It'll hear the request to send, but it won't hear the clear to send. And therefore, it will know that it's free to set up its own transmission. You can avoid one or both of those problems using RTS CPS. Yeah?
Well, just what happens if a node receives like a clear a request to send, and he's not the one who we send it to?
Well, the request to send has information about who it's being sent to. If it's not you, what you know is that I can hear this transmission or not. And how long it's going to take. If it is you, then you send a clear send.
Okay.
Okay, so it does, it increases the overhead. Again, can also decrease collisions, and in particular, if you're worried about sort of specific transmissions, that can improve their chances.
Okay. So, as we said, the messages themselves, or the fact that they're being sent, gives us information. So if you hear just a request to send, a clear to send, that's information. Also, it contains information regarding the duration of the transmission. So stations maintain this information, and they again use it to determine when the medium is clear, and therefore they can again begin the process of looking. So one other component we see here is we're called IFS, interframe spacing. And again, these IFSs are sort of additional listening periods before starting your transmission cycle. Okay. And what we see here, and it is actually significant, is that different spacings are used. Okay. So the different spacings are essentially going to give us sort of a prioritization on the frames. So, the prioritization is not used sort of to prioritize between different users, but it's used to prioritize between types of communications. So essentially, if you have control information, so like your request to send, your clear to send, maybe like your acknowledgments, then they're going to be slightly more important than just sending data. And so we have different interframe spacings defined, and in those waiting times before you send. And so shorts, that's IFS short interframe spacings, give us our highest priority, and they're used for control information like RPS, CPS, like acknowledgments. Okay. DIFSS is actually DCF. IFS is just the minimum medium idle time between contention periods. And then PIFS and EIFS, so if you're having cycles of contention-free and contention periods, then you separate them by sort of a longer space to make sure everything is clear. And the IFS is sort of network management, so things that can be dealt with slowly. Okay, so again, the IFS just gives us a waiting period over which we listen and short control frames are going to get in first. If you if after the IFS the
everything's still idle, then we transmit. And if not, then we go into a wait cycle. When we're finished with that wait cycle, we again do more listening and eventually transmit.
If
you detect the system busy, when eventually you detect that the system is idle, well, you can't have everybody then transmitting at once, just because everybody here is idle at the same time. So we go into a further back-off period, and we transmit our frame at a random point after that.
Okay, so again, what you see from this sort of a system is what you would have seen with the Ethernet, that there's essentially built-in inefficiencies, and there's no way to absolutely guarantee that you won't have a collision. But obviously, it works well enough to allow us to use it. Okay.
So, again, anytime a frame is transmitted, then everybody sort of randomizes the time at which they attempt to transmit. Otherwise, again, you would get transmissions where everybody's waiting would pile in. The contention window attempts to regulate this randomness, and again, it grows sort of the more collisions you have. So you try and keep it basically as small as possible so that you can actually, send their information. But in the case of if the network is busy and collisions are happening, then you gradually, or you don't even gradually, you rapidly increase the window. There's a maximum window size, and you're only allowed so many times to retry in sending the frame before it's essentially kicked to a higher level, a higher layer to deal with your inability to send that frame. Okay, so whenever something happens, either your frame is sent or you give up, then you restart the system again and drop your potential window down again.
Okay, so
The frame format is similar to any other frame in the local area network. Because of the complexities of the system, this has a few more fields than before. So one thing we see is that there are actually four address fields. And so again, these are used when we have these extended service sets. So
your message can go through multiple, through access points as well as from one user to the next. And so you need the four addresses to specify that. Okay, so I think you guys can probably just, if you're interested, go through these sort of in more detail yourself. But we have what version of Mac we're using. Yeah. Okay, the let's if we look at the frame control, we have the protocol type, the frame type, so is it a management frame or a data frame? If it's a management frame, exactly what is it doing? Is it coming to or from a distribution system, so again, to or from a different part of the network controlled by a different access point? Has the frame been fragmented? And again, that's a detail which usually has to do with traveling over multiple links or through the internet. And so that's a way of regulating the frame size between various protocols at different layers. We have a retry, a retransmission, power management, indicating again how is the node sort of regulating power? Is it going into sleep modes, etc.? Okay. If it goes into sleep mode, it needs to be woken up. Is security being used? Do we need to reorder our frame, our data? The duration field is used to manage nav. And so we can set it using the, you would set in the request to send, clear to send. And then if we're using contention-free periods, we can indicate the length of that contention-free period. The addresses are MAC addresses, and again, having to do with the end sender and receiver and the access points. Data is just that, the data you want to send. And again, we have this indication of fragmentation, and here, sort of locally, you can get up to 2300 bytes, but if you go out to the internet, your size has to be shorter, and therefore, again, your frame will be split up into multiple components. Yeah.
Does the access point insert, let's say, address 3 or address 4 in the case of an access point network? Does the access point insert that in the frame, or?
I would assume that the access point would, yeah. Okay, so sequence control and frame check sequence are, of course, used to sort of reorder or order your data and make sure that all of the frames have been received. So we have three types of frames. Again, control frames, which are signaling, request to send, clear to send, etc. So managing the transmission of data, managing the medium access control, data, it's just that, carrying data, and management, which allows for sort of initiating your connection with the network and maintaining the connection with the network. Okay, so things like authentication. Okay, so again, power control frames are managing the access, pretty much managing the access to the medium, request to send, clear to send, acknowledging the data that has been sent. And if you have contention-free periods, then sort of managing those. Data frames are essentially a combination of data and control. So you can piggyback control messages onto your data frames, or even just send the control messages in an empty data frame. Management messages can manage your connectivity to the network. And again, would handle things like handover. Okay, so the so we've seen how our medium access is managed, and so the question that you're going to explore in your assignment is sort of why is the throughput actually lower than what is advertised, and so the answer is that you have to ponder again what's going on at the various layers within the overall networking framework. So the data rates considered are physical data rates, but we have what an end user really cares about is the application data, not all the sort of management data and sort of the management functionality. Okay. So, again, I'm not going to get into any real details of security. There have been a number of protocols, and so WEP was the first of these, and it was shown to be not too secure. And then the current one, WPA2, I guess has also recently been shown not to be completely secure either. So, it is patchable, so it's still generally thought to be okay, but there were problems with it. Okay. So, underneath the data link in the MAC layer is the physical layer, and so that is further split up into
the actual transmission of bits and an interface between the higher layers and this physical representation of bits. Okay.
So, as we saw, we had each different version of
Wi-Fi has its own physical transmission scheme, and so if for the older ones, 802.11b and G using spread spectrum, we see that there are a number of channels defined, but you can only get three non-overlapping channels out of that definition. So again, later standards define more channels by going to an OFDM based approach. Lots and lots of different physical transmission schemes, again, have been proposed, and the current standards are OFDM and MIMO based. Okay, so I think probably at this point 802.11n is the most commonly deployed, and that's now being supplanted by 802.11ac. Okay. So, what we'll see is that it has a bunch of sort of tools or tricks available. So it can increase channel bandwidth by aggregating multiple adjacent channels, and it does use MIMO technology. It also uses adaptive modulation and coding schemes, as we discussed earlier, depending on the conditions of the channel, which can depend on the distance from the access point. You can send at higher or lower bit rates, and you use stronger or weaker coding schemes. So if you're sort of sitting right next to the access point, you blast away at a really high rate, and with relatively low encoding, if you're sort of at the edge of the range, you send things slowly, and you make much more significant efforts to code. Okay. In addition to modulation encoding, we can also play around with the channel bandwidth. So we can aggregate bandwidths, and we can also use our MIMO for redundancy purposes, so to send multiple copies of our signal. So the standard defines lots and lots of combinations of these different factors. But not all of them necessarily have to be supported, so this was sort of a future-proofing exercise. If you're an access point, you have to support the first 15. If you're a station, 16. If you're a station, you have to support the first 8. Okay.
And I just throw that in to, again, show you, again, the permutations.
And what we see is that we have different different modulation types, which are giving you different bit rates, and you have different coding rates. Okay. And so you can see down here that this is sort of your best channel conditions. You have relatively light coding, one in every 6 bits is extra to the data, and you can send at high data rates. And then, depending on whether you sort of have a single channel or aggregate a channel, again, you can get
roughly double the data rates. Okay. And so, I think AC is sort of still the one that people are thinking about. And it's, again, sort of more of
the same. We can use sort of more of the same tricks, so we can get more and more channels aggregated together. And we can use more MIMO, so we have sort of additional, facilitate more antennas than for 802.11, and sort of improve on our modulation schemes.
Okay, so AD is what's sort of what they're
thinking of now, and AD can get up to now gigabit rates. Okay. And
does this with more or less sort of the same sort of types of techniques as for AC. Okay, so that's it. And somehow,
I will actually, there's one last thing, which I usually talk about the quality of service, but I think I actually did bundle that into the quality of service lecture. So we will return to 802.11e and talk about quality of service later in the semester. But again, hopefully we've got the sort of at least some appreciation now of how 802.11 works, the variety of possibilities, some of the details of how we actually make how one version will improve on another, and again from a theoretical standpoint, how to achieve medium access control.
So I think the demonstrator should be here in about 10 minutes. And so, again, he'll talk to you about NS3 and getting started with the NS3. Has anybody actually tried to install it on their laptops or anything?
Nope.
Okay. he's going to come, and you know, hopefully he can help you out, and I'll just tell you, give you the, introduce you to the basics, and maybe help you get it installed as well.